This is The Space Story, a weekly space and aeronautics report brought to you by this station and NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Scientists at Cornell University recently made a dramatic new discovery. They found the existence of a huge intergalactic cloud 100 billion times the mass of the Sun, which is as much mass as any of the galaxies we see, like the Milky Way. The discovery was made using the world's largest radio radar telescope, a large aluminum dish-like structure which lies in the mountains of northern Puerto Rico. The telescope is run by Cornell University and is a device for exploring the universe, galaxies, exploding stars, pulsars, quasars, and other celestial objects.
All right, detectives. Carmen Sandiego's herd of swindling swine has struck again. This time, they hit Puerto Rico. The Arecibo radioscope is a radar dish built into a huge sinkhole in a forest. Nearly a quarter mile across, its sensitive instruments can detect radio waves from the far reaches of the universe. Or they did, until this morning, when Robo Crook rode his roboprop over the radioscope and robbed it. What will happen to Arecibo? What will happen to Puerto Rico? What will happen to all those phone calls from Pluto?
Here we go again, Junior. We're off on the road to Arecibo. This taxi is tough on the spine.
Beats the bus, huh, Junior?
Beats me.
Where we're going,
why we're going, how can we be sure? I'll lay you 8 to 5 that we meet Dorothy Lamour. Yoo-hoo!
Great stuff, this bourbon. It's from a land called Kentucky.
I didn't know you brought liquor on board. It is forbidden.
Think I'd set foot on this tub sober? Come on, try it. You can't beat the taste of alcohol in plastic.
The eyes have it.
What do you mean? So what else do they do in Kentucky?
Big, big horse race. They play very good basketball. They have babies like everyone else.
That sounds like a nice place.
Welcome to Voice Print Identification.
It's 2001.
A Space Odyssey.
I'm Wes.
I'm Brad.
A fabulous bird reborn from the ashes of its earlier life.
Max, how do you say chicken?
Thank you. You are cleared through Voice Print Identification.
Yes, I agree.
Open the pod bay doors, please, Hal.
Oh my God, it's full of stars. 2010, here we make contact.
Please continue to keep in touch. We've had some great listener correspondence in the last few weeks. It's been encouraging to us here as we deal with the excessive air conditioning or lack of heat, constant nasal drain of life aboard the Leonov. We were talking to Virginia Smith, and we want to thank her for bringing several things to our attention, one of which is some of the aspects of what we were talking about with the VLA episode. She listened to it and had several things to add. One of them was that Floyd's teaching in a university in Hawaii. The telescope, it's supposed to be on campus, but it's supposed to be in Arecibo, Puerto Rico.
Yes. And the unfortunate damage that's happened to that telescope recently is something that I think about often. And
we've
losing another one of those really important facilities and not a lot of interest in rebuilding or recommissioning this really, really great scientific instrument.
The Arecibo telescope is a radio telescope, which sees the radio waves given off by large objects like planets. A large dish on the Arecibo telescope focuses these waves so the radio data can be collected. Computers then turn the data into pictures. Radio waves are not nearly as affected by Earth's atmosphere as optical telescopes, so it's not necessary to build a radio telescope on a high mountain. In fact, the Arecibo telescope was built inside a giant natural valley. The largest curved telescope dish in the world makes it the most sensitive radio telescope on Earth.
This was a heartbreaking situation last spring or summer of last year, where we followed the account of the observatory, and we basically saw it happen in real time as the professor himself was tweeting it out, help, and then please help, and then...
Yeah, a lot of this was from sustained damage from Hurricane Maria, actually, back from... This was back in 2017. Maria caused a lot of structural damage.
And wow.
It was supposed to be decommissioned. They were kind of on the fence about it. And, you know, there was such a catastrophic amount that they decided not to try to repair it or try to replace it. It's a real shame because it's very much a cousin to the VLA and had a lot of the same radio astronomy goals in mind. And I believe SETI was also using it for continuing the search for extraterrestrial life or any kind of biological, you know, signs on exoplanets and far off galaxies. So yeah, I mean, they kind of would have worked in tandem very well, even though they were physically very different instruments. The kind of data that they were able to bring, very similar. To your point earlier, so after the damage it sustained from Hurricane Maria in 2020, some of the suspension cables that were holding the rest of the facility, you know, in place degraded to the point where they broke. And we saw that image of that main chunk of the panel that had fallen through to the forest floor, essentially, and that was devastating to see.
We know it best from GoldenEye, right?
Yes. Both the movie and the video game.
Yes.
I think it was Cradle, or The Cradle, the mission, or the little area or whatever, but that white bridge-like infrastructure that you see in the middle that lets you get to the scientific instruments for maintenance, that kind of thing. That's where that big battle Bond dukes it out. While, you know, the threat of incredibly powerful lasers all around.
On the Caribbean island of Puerto Rico, Bond was busy raising the temperature in a romantic scene with the other new woman in his life. Then it was back to a deadly game of cat and mouse on the walkways of the world's largest radio telescope.
Here we go.
That's a good... That was great. Up there.
The
double's working up there and doing those stunts.
It all cuts pretty
500 feet off the ground.
Yep.
Well, they let us out in this thing. And no, I actually went up there and walked around.
Oh, you did? Yeah.
And when we wrecked it and some of the shooting, and it was, it's scary because when you look down, there's an open grid. You're standing on, like, you feel like you're standing on air. You know, it's not, all those platforms are all open steel.
Yeah.
This is the Arecibo radio telescope. It's quite an amazing sight. Absolutely ridiculous, really. There were these three pylons with these suspended gantry with this big revolving piece underneath with kind of the telescope. And this is the big reflecting dish. You can get underneath it. This is all perforated metal. And this is a little servicing vehicle that goes out to the center. You can walk out there on a walkway. Quite an amazing sight. This dish is dark, gigantic. And this is exterior, because this is being used for scientific projects.
Okay, this is the Odyssey file. Email correspondence was practically unheard of outside the academic community, which makes sense. They were really the first ones to get internet up and running.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of universities and educational facilities that had internet before internet was really a thing. And the edited highlights of the emails were published as a book, The Odyssey File.
Ding, ding.
Whoop.
So this has got to be the first book ever published of emails.
Yes.
I mean, think about how many books since then.
There's a lot of, and there's a lot of older composition books that are written correspondence that have been, you know, either photographed and put into some kind of publication, or
mm-hmm. Yeah, or transcribed.
Yeah. That's fantastic. So this not only was the first time email was kind of used outside of an academic situation, but also the first time that these letters, this correspondence, this digital perversion of, you know, courier services gets used. That's cool. From October 13th, 1983. On the subject of the first week in November, I'm going to Arecibo on the 7th of November. If there are people there who you'd like me to relay your regards to, I'd be happy. I anticipate a reply tomorrow, like, I'm glad you're going to Arecibo. So that's interesting. He really wanted to go scout it out. And I guess, was he trying to see if it was going to be viable for shooting there? Oh, man, that's amazing.
And
I bet the conditions were pretty brutal. You know, you don't want to send a whole crew and stick them out in the jungle for who knows how long. Do you have any idea of the headaches you've caused by writing that wonderful opening? I love that. So he's basically going to have to rewrite, I'm guessing. So he's like, well, all right, I'll throw out my first part of it, because we were discussing how different the intro to 2010, the novel, is, and how much more kind of like set and world building it does to bridge the gap between 2001 and 2010.
And when he says, I shall give them your telephone number, I wouldn't worry if I were you. They probably won't be able to get through to Colombo, like get through on the telephone. Like I couldn't all day long. I couldn't call you all day
long. Okay. Well,
now we know.
Now we know. Well, it looks like Himes gets a little aggravated with Clark at this part. Do you have any idea of the headaches you've just caused by writing that wonderful opening? Do you? He presses on. I love
Do
that.
You?
Do you? I mean, he had to underline it without underlining it. It's so good. But yeah, to continue, it says, it's easy to talk about people walking like tiny specks on the surface of a big dish. Yeah, he's immediately just thinking like, how are we going to block this? How are we going to, is this going to be on a stage? What are we going to do? That's a shot that's very difficult to pull off. But yeah, it says, I have to find a way to get them to actually do it. I'm sure that probably not only is maybe dangerous, it's a curved instrument. There's very few catwalks and, you know, stable places to mount anything on, and lighting too.
Yeah.
And also being in the rainforest, I am in that tropical type of environment.
All the weather conditions that
I'm sure there were very few and far between times for them to shoot properly.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he's basically just like, this is going to be an absolute nightmare. I have to find a way to get them to actually do it. Much less lug all that gear up there when the grips are complaining about carrying these Panavision cameras and dollies to the top of the dish. Huge, huge crates. I bet they all had Pelican cases too.
Yes.
It says, I shall give them your telephone number. Wouldn't worry if I were you. They probably won't be able to get through to Colombo. Like I couldn't all day. And I'm sure he spent
that was a day.
A big chunk of time.
It sounds just like that was ringing a day.
Clark trying to get through. What Somebody kind of switchboard operation? Because if I recall, Clark was talking about the difficulty of him having to get his automated switchboard up to use email. And he was using his own home connection instead of like a, I don't know if they had them in education or in government facilities at that time, but hey, he's talking about how he's having to set up like a 10-digit number that can automatically go through so he can try to hit this, you know, connection just the right way to get his communique through. It's fantastic.
I just love the way they're talking to each other.
Arthur's reply, October 14th, which is great. So a letter even then would have taken, who knows, from Sri Lanka?
A couple of weeks.
From Arthur the next day. Since your dumb machine only accepted the file name of yesterday's... and not the contents. What? Hold on. What's an ACC-22 or an ACC-22?
It's right next to the AE-35.
Just a moment. Just a moment. I've just picked up a fault in the AE-35 unit.
Since your dumb machine only accepted the file name of yesterday's ACC-22 and not the contents, here it is again. Tear off at the dotted line. And here are the missing contents of this correspondence he was supposed to receive. Arecibo will blow your mind. It was a frustrating experience having just an hour there back in 73.
If you want to take a picture of an asteroid, you can either send a spacecraft for $1 billion, or you can come to Arecibo and take the picture here. And it's a lot easier to do and a lot cheaper, actually.
What makes Arecibo Observatory unique among the great observatories in the world is that we do three fields of science, and we do it with a precision and sensitivity that's unmatched by any other observatory. Those are astronomy, radio astronomy, planetary astronomy using the radar, so it's radar astronomy, as well as upper atmospheric science, and in fact atmospheric science from the surface of the Earth through the outer reaches of space. Well, one of the great things about this place is you never know what the new initiative is going to be and what the new scientific breakthrough is going to be. We certainly will remain on the cutting edges of the three fields that I mentioned, atmospheric science, radio astronomy, and planetary radar astronomy.
We live on the surface of the Earth, and the lower atmosphere is most relevant to our lives. That's what we breathe. But we cannot separate the lower part of the atmosphere from the upper part of the atmosphere. If we want to understand the atmosphere, we want to understand global warming, climate change, we need to include the whole atmosphere in our understanding.
Give my regards to Tom Claude Felter, who is now a programmer there, but once built the yellow submarine that looked for the Loch Ness Monster. What is he talking about? He's totally messing with him. After that grandiose joke that Hyams left for him, that bit of correspondence, how cool. Cosmos number 12.
Oh, because Carl Sagan probably went to the Arecibo to film that episode.
If Carl could do it in Cosmos 12, oh, I love Carl Sagan's Cosmos. What a wonderful series. Yeah. So he's saying, like, if Carl could do it in Cosmos 12, so can you. That's pretty big.
Suck it up.
I've just run the tape again, and it gives an excellent idea of the setup. But, of course, details will be completely different in 2010. I shall convey your regards from Tom Claude Felter. What headache? What headache? I'll tell you what headache. There's a difference between Carl Sagan shooting some 16mm documentary footage and a full Hollywood crew using the equipment we use. Yeah, I imagine that is a complex rig. I mean, this is not some simple shot that they're having to do.
No, they're shooting scope.
I'm not complaining. I just want you to feel sorry for me. Just a little pity. This is going to be an undertaking. So, you know, his mind's thinking, man, not Arecibo. Let's do the VLA.
Yes. So then on November 3rd, 1983, Hyams replies with, I am leaving for Arecibo tomorrow. I will go to New York over the weekend and return here Tuesday, since there is no one else here crazy enough to try to work this thing. I will shut it off after I send this message so you won't have to yell at me for the next 4 days. If you find the void too great, yell at me anyway. I'll probably hear you. But above it, he's saying, yes, I have a surge protector on all three computers here. I learned of the importance the hard way when my word processor threw an embolism and destroyed 40 pages of a script 2 years ago. I'm so paranoid. I'm thinking about getting surge protectors for the surge protector, which is a pretty good line. And I think we all have that experience.
This is ridiculous, man. Here's Clark again. Hope you had a nice trip to Arecibo, and look forward to your reactions. I'm sure the studio will be delighted if you decide it's cheaper to build the whole thing in the back lot. Well, back to PH 36. I've no sympathy for anyone who loses 40 pages because he forgot to save regularly. We talk about this all the time.
Oh.
One is none, two is one.
Yep.
Live and die by these rules.
Yes.
Yeah.
Measure so, twice, cut once.
Most I've ever lost is one page. Well, maybe two. Or just possibly three.
Now we're getting to it. November 8th, reply that day, says Himes. I spent most of the last 4 days in airplanes. I don't know if I'll be able to eat with regularly sized forks for a while. Arecibo is, of course, one of the wonders of the world. It is also, however, something of a disappointment. It is filthy.
Oh.
I mean, truly filthy.
Oh, no.
It looks like an abandoned parking lot. They say they can't possibly clean it. We're talking really dirty. I had the strangest feeling that might not be understandable or translatable. I had the feeling that if I began 2010 there, it would look like a location that was no longer in use. I don't know. I have to spend a few days drawing. I find I learn a lot more from drawing a scene than by talking about it. Interesting.
Yeah.
What a great director. One of the alternatives is the VLA in New Mexico. I'm sure you know about it.
Wow.
I saw some photographs, and I may go down this weekend to take a look. It could be wonderful. Or it could be, as my mother says, dreck.
Well, it looks like they've also had some phone tag going on here, because since Arthur's reply was typed, apparently Haim's PH37 arrived.
Welcome to email.
Yeah, exactly. Arthur replies, your PH37 has arrived. Sorry they can't afford a cleaning woman at Arecibo, referring to the absolute mess, which your description of it made me think of something Werner Herzog would say about the jungle, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Even the stars were a mess. Says, of course, by 2010, it may not be in use anyway. He was wrong about that, but not terribly.
Not too terribly, that's right.
Yeah, huh, because 2017 was really the beginning of the fall of it. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. But yeah, ditto to the VLA, which is untrue. VLA still going strong.
Exactly, stronger than ever.
Do you think that Arecibo is neglected because of its location in Puerto Rico?
Yes.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do too.
Yeah, and the lack of Puerto Rican statehood, which is another issue altogether that I think
complete
we can get
issue
on board with.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of like recovering from hurricanes,
yeah,
they still have yet to recover
yeah
from a hurricane that happened, what, 4-5 years
yeah
ago, maybe longer.
Yeah,
I could be wrong.
Seven, yeah,
it's been a long time. Anyway, that was a a tangent that just needed to come out. Of course, by 2010, it may not be in use anyway, ditto to the VLA, which is certainly an acceptable alternative. And I think right there, as soon as he hears it's something stateside, not only is it stateside, but it's on the West Coast, which means they're going to have clear skies. You know, I didn't realize that Hollywood became so popular for film because of the weather.
Yep. And originally, film stock and the lenses in those cameras required so much light that you only thing with light would be the sun. And so the first studios were open roofs. Yeah. And so they had a place where you could build a building and then have no roof on it because it never rained.
Yeah.
And keep your set in there.
Yeah. And it's
all day.
Very temperate environment. So, yeah, I don't know why that never dawned on me, but it was interesting to read.
Well, it just seems like a pleasant byproduct.
Yeah.
Until you realize that, yeah, it was just orange farmers.
Yeah, when film was really getting started back in the early 20th century, it was really reliant on natural light. Maybe you could shed some more light on this topic. No, the black hole! But does that film require more light to expose correctly?
So the original
like
nitrate
the silver
films, yeah, the silver nitrate, absolutely. And early lenses also didn't quite have the focus and iris we do now with lenses. So once those were developed in the 20s, pretty much.
Yeah, huge advantage.
Big time. So there's a shot of Peter Himes at the VLA. Ha, he's setting up a shot with a...
They've got him on the sky
lift. He's got him. That's great. He's on a full legitimate crane with a 70 millimeter camera with a Panavision lens on. Everybody's happy. We're rocking full equipment. We're not lugging it up in backpacks
to
in Arecibo.
Yeah, that would have been intense. Fighting off all kinds of indigenous monsters, I'm sure. Tarantula? I'm pretty sure tarantula or native. There?
Hell no, let's go to the VLA.
The SETI program is a scientific program designed to look to see if there are any other living beings out in space somewhere.
The observatory was initially conceived to study the composition of the material in the Earth's ionosphere. Then scientists realized that its antenna could be used for other purposes. Dr. Don Campbell is director of the Arecibo Observatory in Puerto Rico.
One of those was the study of planets using the radar now, so that you actually send out a signal and bounce it off the planets. People at that time had detected the moon with Earth-based radars, but they had not detected the next nearest planet, Venus. And it was realized that the sensitivity of this system would be capable of doing that. As it turned out, Venus was detected prior to the finishing of the construction of the Arecibo telescope by other radar systems in the United States, Great Britain, and other countries. But it was used for many years, and still is, for studies of Venus, Mercury, Mars, the outer planets, sundry asteroids.
Other uses of the antenna are pulsar studies. In November 1982, scientists discovered a pulsar that's rotating 640 times a second, 20 times faster than any other pulsar previously discovered.
They actually found pulsars and thought that those pulsars might be signals from alien civilizations. It turned out they were just stars. But in 1974, when the Arecibo telescope was recommissioned after an upgrade, they decided to do what's called an active SETI test. And they sent a message out into space to a star cluster that's about 25,000 light years away. That means it will take the message 25,000 years to get there. And if anybody's there to answer it, it'll take their answer 25,000 years to come back. So searching for life out in space is not easy.
The Arecibo message was broadcast to an interstellar level and was an attempt to reach out to other potential civilizations. It said it was broadcast a single time via what they call frequency modulated radio waves, and I don't pretend to understand how that works, but it was a message designed by some heavy hitters like Frank Drake from the Drake Equation and Carl Sagan. But it was like a demonstration of our human civilization and technological advancements that we've made throughout the years to kind of show that we have stepped up to the cosmic stage. But that's got a lot of controversial baggage as well, because a lot of people think that we shouldn't be broadcasting that we're here, and that it's possible that other more advanced civilizations would just come and kind of either take what we have or annihilate us for fear that we become more advanced than they. That's one of the problems with, it may have been one of Fermi's paradoxes. It's like the quiet civilizations, and then there's, oh god, I don't want to go off on this tangent. I'll do that some other time. It's pretty interesting. It talks about how there's all these different probable situations where we haven't heard from aliens because they either know to keep their heads down, or we're in such a far-flung corner of the universe they can't really hear us or see us yet. And the potential where the longer that our galaxy exists, more civilizations will arise and hit borders and either overcome or be annihilated, and it will come down to there being just either a few really big galactic empires. This is way off track, but, or, you know, if we're early enough to the stage, we should try to do that ourselves and try to populate as many planets as possible, because if we don't, we could be the ones being pushed out of our own territory. It's basically a mirroring of all of human history. And there could be some
unregulated capitalism.
There could be some humanistic bias, obviously, but I think that was
just the way our animal instincts.
Kind of a behave. Just a very loose theory about why we haven't heard from aliens or had any kind of contact like that. But yeah, it's some interesting possibilities there.
Yeah. big balloon to pop later in my brain.
We'll do something about that later. Shining from the Leonov. I'm Wes.
And I'm Brad.
Signing out.
Thank you.
Say goodbye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, Dr. Ford.